Hello again, it's Patrick Kelly with Airtime, the official podcast of the Olympic Styles of USA Wrestling Kansas. As the calendar turns to July, Fargo becomes the focus for wrestlers from across the nation. Team Kansas will begin their Fargo camp on Thursday at Baker University, as detailed in the last episode of Airtime when we had Olympic Styles director Will Coakley on. We are fortunate today to have a special guest to mark the push to Fargo. With us on the line is Jason Bryant. Jason has become one of the most recognized personalities in the sport of wrestling today. The Old Dominion University grad began his yearly pilgrimages to Fargo as a teen when supporting the Virginia national team as a reporter. He has risen the ranks since then with stops at USA Wrestling and venturing out on his own. The entrepreneur has built a highly regarded enterprise of media ventures within the wrestling community and has provided recognition, education, and information to the masses that follow the sport. He is the voice behind many high-profile events, including the NCAA Division I Nationals, prestigious USA Wrestling and UWW events, and his crowning achievement, the English voice at the 2016 Olympics in Rio. It is a pleasure and honor to have Mr. Bryant on our program today. Jason, welcome to Airtime.
Hi, thanks, Pat. I've been checking out your stuff for a while now. You're definitely doing some good stuff that I'm keeping an eye on there in Kansas.
Well, I appreciate that. A well-worn piece of advice to young people is to find something that you love doing and you will never have to work a day in your life. To me, you seem to embody that philosophy. Your enthusiasm for and interest in introducing your listening audience to wrestlers, coaches, and wrestling-related personalities is evident, and your preparation is impressive, the way you come up with facts and figures and the depth of questions you ask. What captivates you about the sport of wrestling, and how did you put yourself on a path of being able to make a living out of supporting and enriching wrestlers in the larger wrestling community?
The captivating part's actually pretty easy. I think you have to go back to the first match I ever saw in my life. And just to preface this, I moved to a wrestling crazed town when I was in the seventh grade, Pocosin, Virginia. That's spelled with a Q. Go figure it out. And so I knew the school and the town had some wrestling tradition. I didn't know much about the sport. Matter of fact, just, you know, periodically seeing a highlight here and there from like the Virginia Duels, which was, you know, right down the road, which later would really help define my career. But my sophomore year, a friend of mine named Terry Daniels goes, he was a local guy who had help. It was friends with the PA announcer who was training me on baseball my freshman year. So I was into sports, into broadcasting, journalism. I knew I wanted to be a sports broadcaster when I grew up, and I've known that since like I was in the fifth grade. So Terry goes, "Hey Jason, you gonna go to a wrestling match here on Wednesday?" And it was a Wednesday. I'm like, "It's in January in 1995. I'm like, "Sure." I knew we were good, and then within probably 3-4 bouts. It was a single dual meet against Deep Creek High School, and it just, what was captivating was it was hand-to-hand combat. Looking at it from a perspective of, I was a mediocre at best athlete. So I played basketball. My best sport was probably baseball. Played a bunch of things in the neighborhoods and in rec leagues and stuff, but really wouldn't say I was a standout in anything. And then But I appreciated all the sports, and even things that I never did. I never did swimming, but I had friends growing up that were high level swimmers at like the clubs in the area. So when I see wrestling, and I see it, you can't pass to a teammate. You can blame the referee. I think there's plenty of instances that you can, but I just basically the overall purity of it. It was like, this is you. Again, we're gonna get into the singlet debate at some point. Possibly, but that was probably the one thing that was the most detractive to me was, wow, that's a great sport. I just don't want to wear that thing. But when we look at what I saw, and then we got to about 145 pounds, and I remember it distinctly, and it was a guy named Wesley Backus, who was a state place winner for us, and he cradled up a guy and pinned him from Deep Creek High School, and it was the first fall I had seen. I'm like, whoa. And at the same time, I got to give Terry credit because he was explaining the rules to me as we went, which is one reason I'm such a proponent of a dual meet, is because it can introduce people to the sport of wrestling, because I was that kid that single dual meet introduced the sport of wrestling to. So, 2 points for a takedown, 1 point for an escape, trying to remember the weight classes, getting, is it clinched? That was a year we didn't even have 215 in Virginia yet. It went 189 to heavyweight. And then there was a fall at 189, and I remember Terry going, "That's it," because he had done the math to know that even giving up 6 points at heavyweight, we won the duel. So that moment really kind of brought me into wrestling. And then 2 days later, again, Terry talks me into say, "Hey, you want to go to the Virginia Duels?" So that's a Friday-Saturday event. So I'm a sophomore, and I don't know if I made up an excuse or not for missing that Friday, but I was at the Virginia Duels. And that first round, it was the very first year of the National Invitational High School Tournament, which at that year was 1995, again, January 95. And there were eight teams, and we were the seventh seed, and we were taking on the number two ranked team in the tournament. They were 18th in the country, McEachern, Georgia. And they had a guy named Todd Lambert who had won like 100 in a row. Was like, is he going to wrestle one of our wild men, Eddie Keaton? And you know, it came down to being one of the most poignant moments in my wrestling career, because Jimmy Jones, who is actually very prolific on Facebook, he's an interesting character. He got a fall at 189 and sealed the duel. It was 27-26 in this little AA school from Virginia's favor. And that really was the moment I was hooked on wrestling. So that's where the enthusiasm comes from. So as far as the path, we can break that down later. But that's a long answer to a short question.
Yeah, so now you said this was your sophomore year. Now, didn't you actually participate on the team as well at some point?
I came out my junior year, towards the middle of my junior year. We had a new coach. The coach that sophomore year was a guy named Andy Stone, who had came up from Georgia. And then a guy named Billy Ruff came in. We had a run of four straight coaches in 4 years, to my knowledge. I think, Joe Boone, who wrestled Oklahoma, he came up from Texas my freshman year, then Andy Stone, then Billy Ruff. Before that, I think we even had a coach. I can't remember his name. It might have been Wayne Gibson, but Coach Ruff really kind of saw I was kind of this, you know, energetic, kind of eager kid, even though I was very hesitant about actually wrestling. And he, you know, we're a school that if you're a big guy at any point, you're playing line, because our tailbacks on our football team, and we want to run a wing tee. So it was basically run the ball, buck sweep. You know, it was halfback dives up the middle, if you know the football terminology. Right, sure. And our 1,000-yard rushers were our 135 and our 125 pounders. So we're not a big school. So somebody my size at the time, probably 180, 190 pounds, I was going to play on the line. I was going to be an upper weight. Okay. So part of that was I didn't want to go out there and get the crap beat out of me by these gargantuan guys that we had in the room. I mean, I was still my freshman year, I was only 5 foot tall. And I really didn't really hit a growth spurt until, you know, the 3 inches I grew after high school. So part of it was the fear of getting beaten up, and then, you know, the singlet thing. I didn't want to have to wear that thing and get beat up in the same time. But, you know, I came out. Billy talked me into coming out, and, you know, I was, you know, again, horrible. I didn't really take to the sport athletically. I picked up a few things that here and there, but, you know, I was on the team. I guess I could basically say the best way you describe it, I was on the team because we were nationally ranked. We were a pretty good program. They were second in the state basically all 4 years of high school. They won a state title 2 years after that. And this is in the heyday of Kevin Dresser's run at Grundy before he was even in Christiansburg. And Grundy had some monster teams. The first year I went to the state tournament to watch, my junior year, they put 14 in the state semis, 12 in the finals.
Oh my.
And they lost five matches the entire tournament. The entire tournament, they lost two semis and three finals. They scored 320-something points. We had 167, and we were second. It was, and the third place team had 67. So we had nine state place winners, two champs, and we weren't even a thought. Grundy had it wrapped up by day one. So there was that era that we're wrestling, and I was like, man, I could get beaten up. So on the team, like I said, is the best way to describe it. And you know, I did the PA for our home duels. They actually did honor me on senior night, which was really nice. Actually, I didn't expect it. Now that I look back on it, and you know, because I was, you know, never wrestled a varsity match. In the lineup. So it's just, it just really kind of took to me. And I was still doing, you know, at that time, eight sports. I was a sports editor of the yearbook in the newspaper, working at a daily newspaper at night. So I was pretty busy. I didn't realize that at the time wrestling was going to be something that would, my career would veer off to.
Well, that's interesting too, how you sought that foundation that you gained, but the opportunities that I suppose teachers and coaches gave you along the way too was kind of a neat thing for you.
Well, and with that, you know, we have a lot of situations where some coaches just don't have the time for the kid they're going to have to put a lot of time into that's not going to really pay them any dividends. And, and some coaches run those type of kids off. They make practices so hard that the week quit. And you know what? Those practices were really hard. And, you know, through my senior year working at the newspaper, I had to check out. Coach understood it. And I came in when I could, but I was working nights at a newspaper. So I'm not going to make excuses why I stopped wrestling that senior year. But it was one of those things where Coach he encouraged me to stay around the sport. And, you know, he actually told me, You're going to do a lot more for the sport of wrestling, what you're doing now, than you ever will for me on a mat. He told me that specifically.
Wow, that's prophetic.
That's not a made up quote. That's not revisionist history here. He actually physically told me that the last day I walked out of practice my senior year. So, or what I thought was going to be the last day. So, you know, looking back on it, yeah, it was prophetic, but it's just it's strange. And there was a lot of kids. We were a small school. We had to have 2 and 3 sport athletes to be competitive. So it's not like we could have the kids that specialize just in wrestling. Like I said, our tailback ran for 1,000 yards. You know, my drill partner, Emil Cochet, he played football and he was a catcher on the baseball team. We had guys running track, throwing discus. And obviously, a lot of the big guys played football. The Eddie Keaton guy I mentioned earlier, 125 pounds, my sophomore year, he led the Bay Rivers district in sacks, and he was a nose tackle at 125 pounds. Oh. So it was, that type of school. You can't have, you don't have a whole lot of, everybody's a workout partner. Everybody's worth something. So I actually applaud the coaches nationwide that do their best to keep let's lack for a better term, the scrubs. The kids that are out there. For me, I lost weight. I got in great shape. I don't know how much self-confidence I built out of it because, there's a lot of things that are humbling when you get pounded in the room every day by guys that are wrestling for the state titles and stuff. But it was, keeping those type of kids involved, really, even if they never start, even if they're just a JV lifer. I mean, you don't know what those people are going to bring. I mean, whether it's I look back, I still hold my high school career, the lack of it basically, in high regard because of what Pocosin wrestling meant to me as really kind of creating my second family, so to speak.
And back to the dual meet part of that, it is interesting that, as somebody, new to the sport, that is the forum that that captivated you with wrestling. It wasn't a grind of a 2-day 32 team tournament. So that's another thing I think for us to kind of keep in mind.
Well, yeah, and plus the Virginia Duels is a dual meet tournament. So we got done at 10:00. We come back at 2:00. So you hang around, you watch the second round, or like that Saturday, I was actually playing in rec basketball game that Saturday. So I was like, okay, here's my game. I was like, how am I going to go watch this wrestle Great Bridge? So I'd go to the Coliseum, then I came back, played my game, turn around, went back. So that's one thing like dual meet tournaments and stuff. You could, your schedules are set. You can go, okay, we know I'm going to be here, here, and here, and you can do things in between. So, and I didn't actually see an individual tournament until regionals that year, which my sophomore year, I didn't see anything, but my junior year is when I really saw an actual tournament. And I started announcing, and it was a JV. It was basically every youth tournament you've ever been to, Pat. It was standing there as I'm thinking, I'm going to announce wrestling. I'm going to announce this JV tournament and then do the dual meets and then, do this. So basically it was like, when do I wrestle? Did you call me yet? I'm like in this bad microphone. I'm in a corner. I'm like, this is a tournament. This was a zoo. And it was just, yeah, that JV tournament was a bad introduction to tournaments. But later on, I actually announced regionals that year and sectionals, and learned that's really where I think my announcing, ability really shined, is in a tournament where there is chaos. So not the youth tournament side of things, but as far as couple mats, things going on back and forth. So that's where I think the tournament brought me something different than a dual meet did.
You're a high-profile wrestling personality by any standard. What impresses me, though, is that you haven't forgotten your roots and are just as enthused about covering the NAIA or D3 Nationals as you are about interviewing celebrities in our sport, announcing in Madison Square Garden. You seem to care equally about the guy from Briarcliff as you do for Helen Maroulis or John Irving. Where does that come from?
Part of that, again, I think is the fact I came from a AA high school. And in Virginia, I'm not sure how it is. I know there's a lot of classes in Kansas, but in Virginia at the time, there were three public school classes and there was one private school class. Well, being good in AA really didn't get you a whole lot of respect because we were nestled in, at the time, the power region of Virginia, the southeastern part of the state, Hampton, Newport News, Virginia Beach, Chesapeake, where your Great Bridges, your Cox, a lot of your Western branch at the time, they were Hammers. And we were a AA school that, had a lot of state place winners. And, you're AA. That's like your state's like our region. I heard that from a guy. I was like, wait, but we beat you, dude. Our 25-pounder teched you. We had those type of discussions. So part of it was the wrestling is exciting. And, you know, there are wrestlers that compete at smaller divisions. I don't want to say lower. I'm really kind of careful about saying lower division. I just want to say smaller divisions or different divisions in that respect, because they can compete, especially at the college level. They choose Briarcliff. They choose Morningside. They choose Baker for different reasons. They don't choose them because they can't hack it in Division One. They choose it because, you know, Mark Bauer, now the AD at Kearney, like, for example, he would offer an athlete something that they couldn't get anywhere else. And it was a situation that's, you know, let's be honest. The reason you're in college is to get a piece of paper that you can put on a wall and get a job. It's not necessarily, you know, everybody outside. I mean, how many people in Division One get to make the world team right now? Well, they're, what, 10?
Yeah.
10? You know, Olympics, it's, you know, got that many people, and okay, yeah, that should be your goal. Great, should be your goal, but it's not. I mean, that's a special part of the population that have that ability. You know, Tervell's a guy that came from Division II that can do that. But, you know, I care because it's there is exciting wrestling at every level. Now, what really does bother me, though, is sometimes the purity aspect. And I speak about how much I like the purity of the sport of wrestling. But I don't pay attention to Division II or Division III. You know, I only want to watch the best. Well, do you go to a high school wrestling match and you say you only want to watch the best Division One, yet you're going to watch high school wrestling? So they basically defeat their own argument when they say that, oh, I only want to watch the best, and then they see something that's less than the best. Oh, that's different. That's high school. There is exciting wrestling at every level. There are stories that need to be told at every level. There, you know, I've seen some really sloppy Division One wrestling, and I can tell you this: I've announced some really bad Division One wrestling. I've been Old Dominion in Delaware State when I was in college. Man, we're talking about 50 people in the field house, and these two teams were horrible. One of the worst ones I think I ever did was also, again, involving Delaware State. It was a Saturday at noon. So on a college campus, a noon dual meet, Delaware State and Franklin and Marshall. At the time, they were winless, so their only win was going to be against one another if they weren't going to wrestle Sacred Heart at the time. So I've seen some really bad Division I wrestling, and where schools like Mankato and Omaha at the time and Kearney, as we mentioned, like Parkside, that really have had good wrestling, Division III, the Wartburgs and the Augsburgs and the Coes of the world. Like, that's more exciting wrestling than some of these bottom level Division I dual meets. That's just the fact of the matter. So the fact I don't get obsessed with the level, I like watching wrestling. I like seeing drama unfold. The first year at Division Threes, you know, as a sports fan, and I think this is where my all sports background actually helps, is you look at a basketball tournament, March Madness. You know, when the number two seed loses, that's a big deal, right? Well, in wrestling, when that number two seed loses, that's a big deal. So that natural progression of how to follow a bracket in sports, I go to the Division III tournament, and the number one seed, I remember the first year, I think it was Jerome Owens from Johnson and Wales, I want to say 2009, undefeated coming in the tournament, top seed, or no, maybe the second seed, hits a pigtail, gets beat in the pigtail, then comes back in the consolations, gets beat in the first round consolation pigtail. The guy was the two seed, undefeated, All-American, and didn't even make it to the introduction march. That's how crazy the Division III tournament is. You see stuff, a one seed goes down almost every year in the first round. That is exciting. That's what these people come to see. They've got their teams. And one thing also about Division III that I love that I have not seen in any other division is the student involvement. When you go to the Division IIIs in La Crosse or in Cedar Rapids, especially in the Midwest, where schools like Luther come in, Augsburg, Wartburg, they're students. They're these rosters of like 40, 50 guys. You know, Luther has a chant. I know that some of the Midwestern teams like to chant East Coast timeout at the schools from New Jersey when they take injury time. You know, that is stuff that you cannot really, when you see it for the first time, when you experience it for the first time, it really gives you an understanding about these guys are out there battling, and it's, they do it because they love the sport of wrestling. They're out there to compete, you know, just because, oh, well, you should try your hand at Division I. Well, again, Division I's not for everybody. And that's why one thing I'm glad to see that the state of Kansas, for example, is embracing all the NAIA programs that we're seeing grow in that state, mm-hmm. in junior college wrestling. So there's opportunities there that have to be had. Some people just need to understand that, look, just going to college to wrestle it's a privilege. It's not an inherent right. You know, you've got to earn that spot. And you know what? There are different ways to earn it. You can be an under 500 backup guy, and you can wrestle in college. Don't make it think like it's not good enough. You can learn, you can develop in college, whether it's a junior college, whether it's doing something at the NAIA or even Division III, where you get a very vastly different array of schools, a lot of private liberal arts colleges all around the country, a lot of them in the Northeast. So I love every level of wrestling, because every level of wrestling has its array of excitement, because there's some things that you can see at Division II and Division III you just cannot see at the Division I level, just because the level might be too high that you will not see some craziness.
Whether researching your favorite program's history, educating yourself before Fargo or the D1 Nationals, or even calling BS on a professed legend in the sport, your Fargo Almanac and D1 fan guides are go-to, worth their weight in gold resources. Tell us about your motivation for putting these comprehensive guides together, and let us know how we can get a hold of a copy.
I get asked so many questions, and you probably get asked these number of questions because you seem to pay attention to things that are going on in your state. Hey, do you remember this? Do you remember this? Well, when you run a website and you have results, people are going to come to you. And that started when I was doing my website in Virginia, which is actually – it's Matt Talk Online now, but it was also Matt Talk Online then. I started that, 21 years ago at this point. And that was where, results from like 1998 through 2005 are up there. And, I had some – you found the VHSL record book and listed the Virginia State champ. So after a while, people start asking you questions. Hey, do you remember that, or do you know this? I look around, it's like, well, we don't have this. Like, Fargo, I think, really was – Fargo was a big watershed moment for me, because I always joke, there's the jokes about the Bison Turf, the bar that I like to frequent, and I've been going to since I was really not old enough to be in that place. But that's another story entirely. But the people I've met over the years, I've met everybody in wrestling through Fargo and through the Turf. So when you start going there enough and you get questions like, hey, when you see firsts – and you want to fact check, working at a newspaper for 8 years. And I was in high school working at a daily newspaper. I had worked there through college and then went full time. So it's a Tribune-owned paper. So I was laying out baseball pages and doing things on deadline and laying out, 2-3 pages a night just to, get the paper out. So that's where the background comes in. You're inquisitive by nature. So you'd never want to see something that's wrong. Like if you hear an announcement, no, that's not right. That guy won 3 years ago. Well, how can you prove that? So when I was working at USA Wrestling, I was digging up some stuff, and Kyle Klingman had given me a copy of Mike Chapman's book, The Encyclopedia of American Wrestling, which is out of print now. And I think it was actually a withdrawn book from the LA Library. I think the stamp on the inside of the book said it. And I'm thumbing through it, and then I see Junior Nationals starting in 71. And I'm like, wait a minute. And it ended in like 85. So that right there gave me the opportunity to say, this is where I can start. It gave me a good starting point. And I went through and I just started compiling stuff and finding stacks, going through amateur wrestling news and digging up, Bruce Clausen had stuff on the Wrestling Report and then Track Wrestling. So, now with the internet the way it is, it's a lot easier to find that stuff. But prior to 1995, good luck finding Fargo results online. It just didn't happen. Or Warrensburg or Cedar Rapids or Iowa City, where they were. Or Cedar Falls, excuse me. And, it's just being able to build lists. I was a list guy. I remember writing out every college, Division I college in the country and their mascot and knowing them and breaking out conferences and creating these super conference models when I was like 12 that, now actually have come to fruition with the way college sports have been. But if I have a question, I want to know where I can find the answer. So that leads to me building these lists and I finished it took me probably a good 3 years to complete the All-American list. And there were still a couple names that were missing, but I'd filled in all the gaps. And when I put the almanac together, I'm like, all right, well, let's see what happens. And, 200 some pages later, I'm still finding errors. I'm still finding things that don't jive and numbers that match up. And every year in Fargo, somebody comes, hey, this guy was here, and I'll change it right then and there. So I always keep an online version of it. That way I can update it. And each year I print it. I'm actually in the middle of updating it now because I've got more stuff in the works for that. But
comes out just a few days, right?
Yep. MattTalkOnline.com/Fargo Guide. And that is what's interesting about that, that's a one-time purchase. So if you buy it once, it's $20. If you buy it once and I update it next year, you don't have to buy it again. You will get automatic free updates of the guide. So of the almanac. So it's not something that's like, well, I've only added this year's results, which you can go get on Track Wrestling or Flow or wherever it might be. And, you know, I put them in there and I've updated the standings and stats and things of that nature. So
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I made my initial purchase last year, and I thought I saw something about that online that, the updates are part of your initial purchase. I thought, wow, that is quite a deal. I was expecting to pay another $20.
It is make some money back on my time. But at the same point, it's a service. It's something that, you know, state chairman, out in Fargo, I put a little flyer in most of the coaches, if I can remember to do it, put them in, it's like, hey, if you want to buy it here, I even give the state chairman and USA Wrestling members out there in Fargo a discount. I only have a very limited number of hard copies that I print up each year. I usually go to the UPS store and print about 10 because, you know, they're almost $25-$30 to print because I'm not printing in bulk. I'm not printing books. And so, you know, you got to go with the retail value there. So if you want to buy it, you know, a hard copy, it's like $50. But I mean, I'm not out there to make money, but I am trying to at least, you know, get a little bit of time out of it. And, you know, it's something that I think is valuable. It's a resource I think every wrestling historian of every state should at least have one. So I should have 50 versions. I should have 50 of them sold at least. But, you know, it's just, I go through and I look at numbers and my wife taught me how to use pivot tables in Excel a couple years ago. And that has totally changed how I break stuff down. And I'm just like, man, this is, like, I geek out. My wife will sit here in the office with me and just be like, oh, just stop it. I'm on a call for work. Stop. I don't know. I just geek out about when I find something that is so crazy, crazy amazing. And I'm like the only, I need to tell somebody, or I'll text Kyle Klingman because he's a history geek. And he's like, wow, that's great. Like, I'm still learning about the sport of wrestling prior to 95. So remember, I didn't grow up in it. I'm the only one in my family who wrestled. So it's, you know, that nature's like coming up with stuff that, you know, ESPN uses the D1 stuff. The NCAA, like, they're like, yeah, they can't endorse it, but they're not preventing me from doing it. You know, ESPN pays me to have these printed up. They basically cover the cost of print. I won't say they pay me, but they cover the print costs to hand these 20, 25 books out to the mat side broadcasters at the NCAAs. Mike Cousin, Adam Amin, who is like the best sports broadcaster in the country right now. The guy is on fire. He is the voice of everything for ESPN. He raves about the D1 preview guide when he was doing the Division I championships. He told Mike Cousins, who came in as the voice the last 2 years, this is what you need to get. So having access to data, and just honestly, if I didn't work for myself, if I didn't branch out and do this podcast, I wouldn't have the time to do this if I had a 9-to-5 job. So I'm fortunate in the fact that I do get to work in wrestling as, you know, kind of a self-created type of entity. And granted, people like, well, what do you do? I said, well, I like to say I'm in broadcasting and in journalism. So that's the short answer. And then I say, you know, PA announcing, I do you know, historical work for the Hall of Fame, you know, podcasting, broadcast, you know, it's kind of hard to sum everything up, but you know, I just love stats. I love being able to come up with stuff that nobody else can come up with, or somebody else has gotten a benefit of a statistic. When a kid from, I remember Elijah Oliver was the first junior national champion from Tennessee. I dug that one up, make sure that was confirmed. The first women, you know, first national champ from South Dakota in this, or for, you know, when it's a first, I love being able to walk over to Sandy Stevens and A.L. Hayes up over in Fargo, because they're the ones that announced Fargo, and hand them a sheet or on the bio, and be like, this will be, if this guy wins or if this girl wins, they're the first national champ, or they're the first champ since 86, or they're, I just love being able to give the athlete that type of, and the state association, you know, when something happens, it's a big deal. I mean, Travis Lee in 2001 won Hawaii's first Greco and freestyle junior national title. And it actually prevented Nick Simmons from winning his sixth in freestyle, which was another record. But just seeing the joy on the faces, even back, you know, 17 years ago, about a state's first national champion, it is a big deal. So I'm just glad that I can confirm that history in some respects to these states, these athletes, and these coaches.
Well, yeah, and I mean, another example was just this last weekend with Gwiz and Kuhn, where you brought up that Greg Gibson was the last one to make two teams. And that, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people were wondering that, and for you to bring that up was really, really a neat deal.
What's also interesting, though, is we're in an era, and there were a couple of people like, well, didn't Frazier do this and this and this, that? And I'm like, yeah, the problem is there is still that issue of going back and finding who won the trials, because, yeah, Greg Gibson was the last one to wrestle on both teams. He may not have been the last one to make both teams.
Ah.
So there's always a comma but or an asterisk. So that's the type of thing I want to eventually get to the point where I can look it all up. And I've got stacks of amateur wrestling news here, and they are, let's be honest, they are the magazine of record, at least through 2006, because that's when I really consider the results archive of the internet to become really robust. But, you know, I'll open up an edition from 1969 and be able to say, okay, here's the second round match, the NCAAs, you know, kind of when those things come out. And then they have the old stuff. So one of my goals, I'm 38 years old. I turn 39 next month, and I will eventually, I don't know how many years it's going to take me, I have a lofty goal of making sure that any tournament of substance, I'm not talking about like the Joe Blow Open that only lasted 5 years, but like, you know, going back and getting all the Vegas results or place winners, getting back and finding, you know, every conference championship. There's a couple out there, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the EIWA are well documented. But, you know, what about the Southern Conference? Yeah. You know, how many straight titles did Chattanooga win? Or, you know, when did App State break the streak? Things like that. Those are questions that I want to be able to have an answer to, and I want to be anybody that wants to know the answer to that question to have access to it. So I'm going to go through these things. I'm going to find these results. I'm going to find these. If it's not the actual individual bounce scores, it's definitely going to be their placement. So that's kind of one of my life goals, to basically digitize the results in these pile of I've actually organized really nicely in these banker boxes of amateur wrestling news, is these old results, because that's all we have right now. I have to give my wife a lot of credit too, because I've been married 8 years. We've got two little girls, a 6-year-old, and Ruby is about to turn 2 here in a couple days. And, you know, she is a rock star at her job. So that enabled me to have the opportunity to decide in 2013, when the Open Mat Amateur Wrestling News merger kind of went south and I was caught in the middle, to kind of break off and say, oh, you know what? It's time to do my own thing. So being able to work from home, watch my kids when I need to, and you know, do things around the house. And I do a lot of, I love cooking. I love coming up with ideas for, I mean, my wife handed me a recipe yesterday for, we're kind of doing the whole 30 thing right now. So that can be kind of painful, but I made pizza dough with, you know, almost like a paleo pizza dough in a buffalo spicy chicken pizza yesterday. And I love being able to do that. And that's something that having, you know, a normal job and then working wrestling on the side would not allow me to do, is to spend time really, you know, I make breakfast almost every morning. Then I come down here and, you know, I do some work, you know, in some cases, you know, I'm on an interview here, but I'll be setting things up and getting things going. But it's because she has the ability to be such an awesome wife and mother, that because I travel so much, and then I can spend the time working on a long-term project that will not necessarily have a payoff at the end of the week, but it might not have a payoff at the end of the project, but it'll have a payoff, you know, a year or two from now. So she has been a rock star in terms of really supporting my passion for the sport of wrestling. And just these, you know, she sees when I get my eyes get all big and I get an idea and she's like, oh, great, here we go again. But, you know, it's been really cool to have that type of support system too. So I could, if I didn't have a wife and kids, yeah, I could probably do all this stuff, but I'd probably be a miserable, grumpy grout. Hey, he's like, nobody's buying this stuff. They're just taking. No, it's just, you know, when you're, you know, happy wife, happy life. Well, you know, that's good things for me.
So I enjoyed listening to Buena Vista's Beaver Cast with Coach Breeze. I'm a regular Inside Virginia Tech wrestling listener, and also don't miss many episodes of the Pack Mentality with Coach Papalizo and Director of Communications Brian Reinhart. What is your thought on these types of grassroots personal shows that can dig a little deeper and give a little more of a personal feel, as compared to, for example, a segment on a weekly radio show or a general athletic department podcast for a college or university that puts out content for general sports for their alumni base? Is this something that you feel wrestling programs should pay attention to, invest time and money into?
Yeah, because if they're doing it, they're probably paying me to do it. No. There's two things to that. One, there is a value for that all sports podcast, because here in Minnesota, the Gophers kind of rule the roost. They are the only Division I team in the state. outside of Mankato and Duluth and Bemidji, have Division I hockey programs. But as an all sports institution, the University of Minnesota is the U. It's what they call it, not the U down in Miami. It's up here. When you say the U, it means the University of Minnesota. So the KFAN, the big sports radio station here in the Twin Cities, has a sports podcast that does represent other sports within the Gopher family. So that's a good opportunity for wrestling to get some exposure within, you know, the greater all sports movement. I think that is necessary. However, when it comes to what's been created with you know, the Beaver Cast is now it's gone to pasture because Jeff Reese left and took a job at Lake Erie College in Ohio. There is some discussion about him and I getting started with a Lake Erie show. That's a pretty new program. BV had a lot of history. That was what was fun about the Buena Vista show is it gave me the opportunity to talk to Al Baxter, the old coach, and some of these All-American. Rick Caldwell was a great coach in Iowa at Waverly Shell Rock. So you get to hear their backstories and how, again, this goes back to these guys were Division III and their impact. You know, one of the best high school coaches in the country at one of the powerhouse programs was a Division III wrestler. Okay, you don't have to be Kyle Dake or David Taylor or a Division I All-American to be a good coach, you know. So you're seeing what he did as a high school coach. And I really learned a lot about some of these athletes and administrators. So Jack Denholm, the AD, you know, he spent time coaching at Ellsworth and has a good wrestling background. And you got a wrestling guy as an AD. That's always good to showcase. So the BV show was really fun because Jeff Breese and I have been friends for a long time. He actually, when I left Intermat back in 2005, he replaced me for a year, and then he got back into coaching. So Jeff and I have had a long relationship with one another, been friends for a long time. So it was good for me to do that. Virginia Tech, that shows the power of a fan base right there, because when there is a fan base that is crazy about sports in general, like Virginia Tech is, there is no reason that a sports-specific podcast like Inside Virginia Tech Wrestling can't succeed. And I have seen the numbers on how that is my highest performing single show outside of Short Time. That is the one that when there is a, you know, Jared Haught comes out and he finished his career, he talks about being a three-time All-American, you know, huge numbers. And the Hokie wrestling fans, the Hokie Nation as a whole, they hit that. They're on their message boards. Like 3 years ago, Virginia Tech didn't even have its own wrestling message board. It was part of the Olympic sports board. Then all of a sudden, the program gets huge, and their fans take to it. There are non-wrestling people that listen to Inside Virginia Tech Wrestling because they care about Hokie sports. So it kind of ties back into there are some things that talk about Hokie sports overall, but when you dive down, you know, the thing in podcasting, as they say, the riches is in the niches. Well, not necessarily the riches in terms of financing, but this has been one of those shows that I love doing because I know how much the fan base, and I went to Old Dominion. I didn't go to Virginia Tech. I'm from Virginia, but that's, you know, 4.5 hours away. So it's not like it was my neighborhood school. So, you know, I'm doing a show for for lack of a better term, a rival school of my alma mater. And I'm so excited to hear the feedback on that because I know they're listening and I get that, you know, you tell these stories. So that is a show that they were one of my first clients too. I mean, Old Dominion was the first because they were my guinea pig. They were my alma mater. And I remember talking to Kevin Dresser at the NWCA convention for about 20 seconds. I was into my sales pitch. He goes, let's do it. And then Tony Roby has stayed on, you know, when he got the job as the head coach after Coach Dresser left, he said, let's do it. So there's value there. And the thing about getting this message to those who actually stroke the check is to understand the value of an engaged audience. You know, numbers are, people are so hung up on metrics and analytics. Well, you got, okay, say an episode draws, say, 2,500 listeners, which is good by pretty much anybody's podcast standards, except for maybe Joe Rogan. And that is, you look and say, well, we've got 2,500 wrestling fans listening to this. And you say, wait, whoa. I mean, how many programs around the country draw that many fans? Not that many. When you say when a Division III school gets 600-700 listeners for an episode, and let's be honest with Buena Vista, they were not a very good program the last, you know, decade or so. So you've got that many listeners for what's basically a bad Division III team at the time. So that shows there are people willing to engage the fan base. So it's encouraging to see a lot more podcasts popping up. I mean, when I started Short Time, I think Matt Slammers was out of Western Iowa, had been around since like 2006. Eddie Goldman's show, No Holds Barred, frequently features wrestling, but those were like the only two wrestling specific podcasts out there. There was one up in Canada that was basically redone as a radio show. But what I love about the medium is, you know, you've seen it with your shows, you know, USA Wrestling Kansas, you got your one for your own program, that it is a way to engage your fan base on their time. They don't have to be sitting here right on Twitter to see it. They can go back and listen to a podcast. Oh, well, there was that interview with John Irving. Oh, that was 2 years ago. Well, I can still go back and listen to that. It's not like it's time sensitive. The one thing about it, it's on demand. You can listen to it wherever you want. You can do it while mowing the grass. You can do pretty much anything. You can't watch a video, talking head video, while you're mowing the grass, or your yard's going to look like crap. I mean, I subscribe to probably 150 podcasts on various topics. The medium really is something that has taken hold, and I'm delighted to see the older generation starting to pick up on it and say, oh, I got this podcast. You're listening to podcasts. Great. Let me get you a better app to listen to these on, because I'm an Apple guy, so I like Overcast. That's my my podcaster of choice. But just it's the wrestling community, yeah, they are paying attention to it. And that's why Flo at one point had three different podcasts. FRL is very popular. Richard, before he left USA Wrestling, had Bonus Points. That was a super popular one. Then Steelwood Radio is based for Ohio State. I mean, we've got it. I think my directory listings at matttalkonline.com/directory, which lists every wrestling podcast that I can find, whether they're on my network or not. I think it's over 50 of them. And, you know, 5 years ago, there were two. So we're really, I've retired 11 shows. So it's, and I've got, I think, 16 active. So you look at the medium, the internet has really driven our sport the last 20 years. Now, here's the next wave of it. Podcasting is going to drive our broadcasting side of things. We've got, you know, we got streaming, but now we got portable on-demand media of interviews and stuff we can take in. Hey, yeah, listen to this interview. You can actually say, you can show it to somebody on your phone. You can send them a link through your phone and they can listen to it. So it's not like they have to be on their computer to do it, because I think over 70%, almost 70% of podcast listenership is through mobile devices. So everybody's got one of these things strapped to their hip or in their pocket or they're staring at it when they're not Snapchatting. It is one of the best mediums wrestling can embrace. And it's not just because I do this for a side hustle or major hustle or whatever. So that again was a very long answer to a very short question.
No, very good. And you know, you talk about, let's admit it, the lack of success of the BV program, you know, and I'm not an alum, I'm not connected with it, but it was very interesting to me just to, you know, hear the personalities, you know, talk about the kids when they're moving in, the freshmen.
That was all Jeff Breese's idea too. I can't take any credit for that one. He was like, let's put Brad Kirkhoff on the microphone and interview the freshmen moving in. That was one of my favorite episodes to edit, because I got to listen to all of them. I'm like, oh wow, okay, this kid's gonna be fun to have on the show. This kid needs a few more interview skills. This kid's gonna be no problem at all. So that's, you know, I'm glad you brought that one up, because that was all Jeff's idea.
Yeah, you know, and when he was talking about the duel that they had in the student union, those kind of things were just really interesting. And regardless of what kind of outcomes they had in the record books, you know, it was really a neat deal that I think will manifest itself in success eventually, or would have, you know, now that Coach Breese has moved on. But so that was really, really an interesting side note there.
Oh, it's also, Tay, you talk, I mean, you're a wrestling junkie, so you're going to pick up on this stuff. But, you know, you got people outside of the Virginia Tech wrestling community listening to the Virginia Tech show. Well, people go, well, aren't everybody listening to the same show? It's like, well, no, because just because you're subscribed to the network doesn't, you know, there is a master network feed where you get every show, which I guess in January can be quite daunting when you got 55 episodes coming out in a month. But it's, you know, you learn things about other programs. And, you know, you end up following a David McFadden if you're not a Virginia Tech wrestling fan. But, that's that two-time All-American from Jersey. Okay, that's funny. You end up following a guy like that. Or you end up following a guy like Mikhail McGee at ODU. You know, you follow these athletes. Or Kevin Wallen. That was one of my favorite interviews of the year. The 48-year-old Jamaican guy. Wrestled at the Commonwealth Games. And, you know, he's 48 wrestling. Come on. That's a fun stuff to do. So what I like about the dynamic range of the shows is, you know, somebody may become a Hokie fan out of it. Well, if they're not, they're going to learn something. So that's also been a big part of why I do things. While I don't write nearly as much as I used to, I feel like what I produce can educate and inform and prevent. Oh, we're in a society of misinformation right now, Mr. Kelly, and I want to prevent misinformation in the sport of wrestling. I really want to prevent it. And I want to make sure that people have the best information possible. And they learn something. They're educated. So that's one thing I like about when people that aren't fans of Virginia Tech Wrestling listen to the Virginia Tech Wrestling Show or Old Dominion or NC State or BV or the World Wrestling Resource that don't know anything about, Terry Brands or Dennis Hall's camp systems. And there's so many things. Or the track wrestling shows where Andy Hamilton and David Mercatani are talking various topics. So I'm a big fan of learning and listening, and the fact that I can do that really makes me happy to get up each day.
So let's circle back to Fargo. You've been making that trek for many years now.
This will be 20. This will be 20 coming up. 20 years, and I am 38 years old. I don't feel like I'm old enough to have been doing something professionally for 20 years.
So what makes it one of your favorite events each year? And do you have a few memories or moments that you can share from your two decades of attending Fargo?
Oh, see, I tried to think last year, Richard Immel and I were thinking about, I was trying to, hey, let's do a best of memories podcast about Fargo. Well, what I ended up doing, I'm going to pull this up while I'm talking to you here, because I remember writing a blog about it I wrote it out and then read it as a solo show, which is rare that I do a solo show, but it was, I went through it and it ended up being like a 45 minute, like soliloquy, lack of a better term, about my memories. Cause I first year I went was 1999 and I was 19 years old. I get a call. I'm working that summer at a KFC with a buddy of mine. We're basically slinging chicken and playing disc golf. That was our summer, having a good time. No, I mean, I'm between my, what year? I don't even know what year in school I was at the time, but it was just a fun summer of, I was taking some time off from the newspaper at that time. And, I'm slinging chicken and playing disc golf and having a good time. And a matter of fact, I want to side note the Kentucky Fried Chicken controversy. So when my first day at KFC, what was the first thing you would do if you had to fry chicken? What's the first thing you would do?
Oh, wash my hands, I suppose.
Well, yeah. Okay. So after you take care of all the health code stuff, I'm like, okay, oh, this is the bag of the original recipe. Let's see what's in the Colonel's secret herbs and spices.
Of course, of course.
I look at the packaging. Number one ingredient, salt. Okay. Number two, monosodium glutamate. Okay. And then you boom, 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 boom. Very last item, herbs and spices. So it's like, because they teach you in school, the first item is always the one the most of, and the last ones are the least of. And it was just so funny. There's like herbs and spices. But anyway, where was I with the, so Fargo. So Mike Newbern, who wrestled at Cox High School in Virginia Beach and spent some time at Blair Academy, who's also wrestled, I think he wrestled three different weight classes, four different years at Lehigh, but they were not in sequential order. So Mike Newbern was a guy who was part of our AAU and our Virginia USA chapter, and calls me up. And my nickname for those who don't know growing up was Twinkie. And I hate Twinkies. I just can't stand them. The overweight kid's not supposed to not like Twinkies. It was a funny joke. I have no affinity for the thing. When they went out of business, I was doing backflips. So he calls me up and says, Twink, we got an extra ticket to Fargo. You want to go? I'm like, hold on. Yeah. Call up KFC. I'm like, yeah, I got to go to North Dakota for a week. I'm like, okay. And so the next day, my name is Gary Alcon on the plane, because this is pre 9/11. And I go and I'm in a dorm and I'm using dial up internet, and I showed up without a press credential. Like, I didn't even, I'd heard Gary Abbott's name, but Rob Sherrill vouched for me. Said, yeah, this guy's legit. And I mean, I'm second, third year in college with this dial up website and using Microsoft Publisher or writing it at HTML. And when you go out there and see the raised mat and you see 23 mats, it's kind of mind blowing. So there wasn't even the Buffalo Wild Wings wasn't even there yet. That ought to tell you how long ago this thing was. So me and Taco Bell were quite good friends that week. But the thing about Fargo is, like, it's Fargo. The first time I ever got on a plane in my life was to go to Fargo, North Dakota, of all places. Now I live six turns from it. It's 1, 2, 3, 4. It's six right turns for me to get to the Fargo Dome from where I sit right now, out of my driveway. I don't need a GPS. I have met some of the greatest people, not in just sport of wrestling, but the greatest people on earth I have met in Fargo, whether it be over beer at B-Dubs or at the turf. I played Silver Strike bowling while drinking dirty martinis with Jeff Blatnick at the turf. I mean, I beat Greg Jones in darts. I beat Kendall Cross in foosball. I've sat there and I've gotten in arguments with Harry Lester in a parking lot outside of the, just the people you run into and the friends you meet. It is, you know, the things I've learned about officiating, the things I've learned about freestyle wrestling, guys like Randall Balsh and Jose Delgado and Akil Patterson and TJ Brablik and all these guys that the referee Sammy Julian over the years, Brock Zollinger. I mean, if I start naming names and I forget somebody, it's going to be bad. So I'm just going to stop right there. But what I've learned so much about the sport through Fargo keeps me coming back. And when you work in wrestling, you know, that's kind of a requirement because that was the draw. Intermat, it was the draw. And then USA Wrestling, it's part of the day. And then when you don't work for the tournament anymore, well, you still got to go because now it's more of a marketing trip for me because I've got, you know, some product to kind of get out there. I got a service that I'm trying to pitch. But at the same point, it is still a very, very important event to the health of wrestling, to the sport of wrestling, because of it is a week-long. Vegas is a long week, but this is a long week too because it's also about our kids. These are kids. I mean, I got a turf mug from the Bison Turf that's older than every single kid in the tournament now. I mean, that thing is the mug will be 20 this year. The oldest juniors will be 19. So the event is so important to who I met. I met Rich Bender there. Met Bruce Baumgartner there. Met John Smith there. You know, you sit there and you sit down and have a beer with Alan Freed and talk about he's the only guy to ever win 4 junior national championships ever. In freestyle. But yeah, so that's the type of stuff about Fargo that is you see the greats before they're great. You know, I saw Harry Lester, who was really great in high school, when he bombed Mark Jane on his head 3 different times and won a Greco Junior title in about 50 seconds, 11-0. I'm like, oh, this guy's gonna be something else. You know, Christian Smith was the first kid from Virginia I ever saw make a final. He made a cadet final 83.5 pounds. He ended up being a 3-time Virginia State champ. And went and qualified a couple times for the NCAA championships for Duke and for Liberty, where he ended his career. You know, Christian's dad was a referee. You know, I've known Wayne for a long time. Just, you know, seeing what it means to step up those 6-7 steps to get on that 4-foot platform and compete and have the big mat light. And this, for a lot of these, this is their coming out party. This is where they show up. Fargo is, it means so much to the sport of wrestling because this is where they arrive. You know, when they're going to Akron to make cadet world teams or Vegas to make junior world teams, or that's, they've already arrived when they're at that point. You know, nobody's going to show up and say, wow, you're here. I mean, it's just so much fun to watch everybody develop over the years through, you know, starting in this campus in North Dakota State University, where oddly enough, my nephew just finished his freshman year now. So I've got family there now. It's not, my nephew's been to the turf before I have, you know, since it reopened. I mean, I don't.
Oh, yeah.
This is crazy talk.
Yeah. Well, you may be doing some marketing and some business while you're there, but I have a feeling if you had a normal 9-to-5 job, you would take vacation to go to Fargo. It really seems to mean a lot to you. And it's really, really neat to hear your enthusiasm.
Well, it's if I had a 9-to-5 job, I'd have to pick one. I couldn't go to the NCAAs the whole time. I couldn't go to the Worlds, the Junior Worlds, the Fargo. I mean, that's the one thing where, again, as I was talking earlier about the situation I'm in work-wise, that I'm blessed to have this ability to be in a situation where I can hit these big ones and be able to, you know, to hit Fargo, to hit the juniors. I mean, last year I was at 5 different international trips. That was a bit rough, especially with 2 young kids at home.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If I had a 9-to-5, that would not be a reality.
So what does your wrestling calendar look like for the rest of the summer after Fargo and into the fall?
Oh, I'm glad you asked because my wife asks me that quite frequently. So for Fargo, I got a couple days off. My mom will come in town from Virginia to visit and see her grandchildren. And so I'll go to the NWCA convention in Daytona from the 1st through the 5th. I got a little bit of time off. Might play in the the St. Cloud State Golf Tournament. I always like playing in wrestling golf tournament fundraisers too because it's another way to meet people. I played in the Pennsylvania Coaches Association, the Referees Association. When I moved to Pennsylvania, the first thing I bought with the NWCA was a set of golf clubs because it seemed like I was in a golf tournament for wrestling like every weekend, even though I'm a hacker. So Junior World Championships will come up in September 15th through the 24th. That's a long run because of the travel. Youth Olympic Games is a possibility, but at this point it's unlikely because the folks in Argentina have not contacted me. But October 18th through the 29th, that's a long trip. That'll be the Senior Worlds. Still unsure about whether the U23 Worlds in Romania in November will be an option. But that's what it is through we get to the first start of the college season. So not as drastic as last year, where I was at the European Juniors, the European Seniors, and all 3 World Championships, and
the Commonwealth Games.
Oh, the Commonwealth Games. Yeah, that was in April of this year. So that actually was that was in the middle of a break. I was like, all right, cool. And then I hit just these past couple weeks, I hit all three final X's, and that's a tough one. Even when you're working it and you're paid to be there, it's still three straight weekends is a bit much during what should be an open wrestling calendar.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they.
I liked it. I'll be honest with you. I liked it. I was on the fence about it, but I liked it because we intimate crowds, and I think that's a whole other conversation entirely. It's right. Just there's a lot of stuff that we can learn about that and really make these home run events.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to join Airtime, and thank you for all you do for the sport.
And my pleasure, Patrick. Anytime you need help, you know how to pay me, so to speak.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
This has been Patrick Kelly with Airtime, the official podcast of the Olympic Styles of USA Wrestling Kansas. Until next time, thanks for listening.